to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up.
Welcome to the belated post-game wrap-up show. I'm your host, Tom Ernesty. With me, as always, is Mike Oliva. Mike, we just got back into town. How you doing? Great weekend in Miami.
Great weekend. A lot of fun. Out of the 3 or 4 years we have now gone down there, I think this weekend was the best on many levels, partially because you didn't lose any cell phones or keys, as well as we got... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As well as we got to see a Miami Hurricanes game, and we got to see, and we had pretty much Saturday all to ourselves to go travel around Miami. And then on Sunday, you know, it was a game between two bad teams, but, you know, a lot of implications with that game. It came down pretty much to the final play. So overall, it was a great weekend for us. We had a lot of fun, which we'll talk about later. But for the team on the field, you know, I know half this fan base wants to lose, and half of it probably doesn't want to lose. Put me on the half that wants to lose each week. Let's not screw this up. And very pleased with the outcome. They almost won. Got a little scary there, not going to lie. But, you know, there were some positives from this game as well with some players. So there's some positives in this game, some negatives, and they lost again.
Yeah, the bottom line is the Dolphins lost the game. But... you know, like you said, there are positives that can be taken away from this game regarding players. And one other thing that I'll get into once we finish the wrap-up show. So I'm not going to dull us with a lot of what happened at the very beginning of the game, where I'll just say the Redskins started the game off 3-and-out. The Dolphins had 4 plays, punt. Redskins, 3 plays, punt. Dolphins, 3 plays, punt. Redskins, 3 plays, punt. Dolphins, 10 plays, punt. Now, this is a drive I want to get into, though.
Yes,
this is a drive I want to get into. All right, so the Dolphins had a 10-play, wait for it, 18 yards, and took up 5 minutes and 57 seconds of clock. So let's just talk about how this all went down. So the Dolphins had the ball 1st and 10 after the punt at the 30. Drake went for 5 yards. Josh Rosen to Drake. Then Kenyon Drake gets 2 yards for a first down, which was measured. Rosen sacked for minus 8 yards. Passed to Albert Wilson for no gain. On 3rd and 18, Josh Rosen passed to Mike Gesicki for 15 yards. 4th and 3, the Dolphins... did a pseudo fake punt where Kalen Ballage received a direct snap, got 6 yards, first down. Kenyon Drake for no gain. Kenyon Drake for 5. Josh Rosen to Albert Wilson. There's a penalty, which was the most bogus offensive pass interference penalty I've ever seen for blocking down the field. I didn't see that. I'm not sure if you did, Mike, but I didn't see any blocking down the field by Preston Williams. Then on 3rd and 15, Josh Rosen pass incomplete to Preston Williams. And then from the 44-yard line, the Dolphins decided not to run a fake punt and actually punt it. The Redskins then took their drive, 8 plays, 93 yards, that resulted in a Terry McLaurin touchdown from Case Keenum for 25 yards. Excellent drive by the Redskins. You know, Terry McLaurin, I was saying yesterday in the press box, that guy's going to be a problem, and he was definitely a problem for the Dolphins' defense.
Well, when you don't have Xavier Howard on the field, wide receivers are going to have a field day against Miami, and that's what happened in this game. Without Xavier Howard, the Dolphins have, you know, nothing at cornerback, nothing. Eric Rowe made one positive play the entire game. It was a nice play, but it was just one. And guys like McLaurin and stuff, you know, they're going to run wild when Xavier Howard's not in the field, and that's what happened here.
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of a shock to find out that Xavier Howard wasn't playing. He was limited in practice all week. He's coming off a bye where he was rested, and the Dolphins decided to keep him out. So You read into that what you want.
He might have slipped in the shower. Maybe he slipped in the shower and he got hurt. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I guess we'll never really find out. So after the Washington Redskins touchdown, the Dolphins had a 9-play, 39-yard drive that was capped off by a Josh Rosen interception that was intended for Preston Williams. He threw the ball into double coverage. That was the slant play where Dunbar made a great play on it, but Rosen just forced the ball, didn't look at his next, read, just stuck to Preston Williams, and Dunbar just made the play because he saw that Rosen wasn't moving his eyes off of him and wanted to throw him the ball. And that ended the Dolphins drive at the Washington 36. So they were moving the ball fairly well from their own 25-yard line on that drive. Had some nice plays from Mark Walton on that drive as well. 11-yard run, and he had a 16-yard pass completion. It was nice to see Walton in this game. Surprising to many in the press box that it was not Kenyon Drake or Kalen Ballage with the starting unit. It was, in fact, Mark Walton.
Yeah, a little surprising, but actually, more as this game goes on, is it really surprising when you think of Drake had another, he came up short again in another big spot. The guy just continues to be a disappointment, I think, week after week, year after year at this point. And with Kalen Ballage, I mean, I haven't seen nothing this year out of him, really. Haven't seen a damn thing out of him. So I think we're going to see more of Walton here moving forward. As, the Miami Dolphins running backs right now, especially with the first string and second string, I don't think they're any good. I just don't think they're any good. And you can blame offensive line. You can blame quarterback. You can blame play calling. Some of the stuff is just mental mistakes and guys just not getting the job done. And I thought Walton looked okay. And I'd rather see him out there at this point than see Drake and, year number four for him, continue to come up short. And I'd rather see him than some other guys. Keep playing Walton. You got nothing to lose. Play Walton.
I agree. I thought Mark Walton was good in his last outing against the Chargers before the bye week. He had some nice flashes in that game. And he seems like he's the most consistent running back. Now, again, that's not saying a lot at the moment. Mark Walton's still only in his second year in the league, too. So, and I know conversationally yesterday we were talking about the running back room, and you and I both agreed if the Dolphins are moving on from Kenyon Drake, you may as well also move on from Kalen Ballage. Let Mark Walton be the running back in the locker room with Chandler Cox and potentially Patrick Laird. And go get another running back in the draft because you can between round two and five, you can find one.
Yeah, and yesterday Walton, he averaged 5.3 yards per carry with that offensive line and with that offense and with Josh Rosen out there at the start of the game, at least, who was absolutely brutal. I mean, he was still getting 5 yards a carry as an average for the 6 times he did run the ball. I mean, to me, again, with Drake, I've seen enough of Drake. I'm all done with Drake. I've seen enough. He's got no future here. He probably has no trade value now at this point either. I don't know how any other team would want him. So he can play out the next however many games, and then we'll never have to hear from him again. And, play Walton. Let's see look, we know what this year is. It's a glorified preseason, essentially. Keep playing Walton and play Laird and play some of these other guys because I've seen enough of some of Drake, and I've also seen enough – well, I don't want to say I've seen enough of – Kalen Ballage, but I haven't seen enough to impress me, so might as well give someone else a shot.
Absolutely. So after that interception, the Dolphins defense held well, 3 plays and a punt for the Redskins, and that led to a Dolphins 10-play, 63-yard drive that ended in a Jason Sanders field goal of 39 yards. It was overall a very efficient drive for Josh Rosen, really his best drive of the game. The drive started at the Dolphins 16-yard line after the punt. It was a 5-yard pass to Albert Wilson, Mark Walton. There's the name again, 14-yard run. Josh Rosen to Mike Gesicki for 6, Rosen to Walton for 1. And then a penalty for a defensive holding gives the Dolphins a first down at their 46-yard line. Josh Rosen was sacked for a 9-yard loss, but was nullified by a 15-yard penalty for roughing the passer. And the Dolphins are in business at the 39-yard line, Albert Wilson for 1 yard. on a pass play. Josh Rosen, Devontae Parker for 12 yards. Mike, don't say anything nice. Then Mark Walton went for -1. 2-minute warning and an incomplete pass on 2nd and 11, 3rd and 11. Kenyon Drake for 6. And then the field goal was good, again, from 39 yards. An efficient drive from Josh Rosen got the team in position to get points just before the half. Mike, what were your thoughts? As we were actually on the sideline at this point watching the end of this drive. So what were your thoughts on the drive?
Probably the best drive Rosen had all day, which only ended in a field goal. You know, it was a nice solid drive there at the end of the half to get some points on the board. But again, Rosen struggled most of the day. This was his one drive where he was able to move the team a little, and they still only ended up with 3 points. So, good drive, but I mean, I don't know what else to say, really.
The second half began. The Dolphins went 3 and out to begin the drive. On this drive, it was Mark Walton went for 4 yards. It was 3rd and 1, and then Isaiah Prince had a false start penalty, and then a pass incomplete to Mark Walton forced the punt. And then the ensuing drive for the Redskins, a 6-play, 70-yard drive that took 3 minutes and 32 seconds off the clock. And it was, once again, Terry McLaurin from Case Keenum for 33 yards out. He was absolutely a problem. Dolphins sorely missed Xavien Howard in this game.
But the part Sunday, of that drive...
And as the Redskins take...
Yeah, but the part of that drive, I thought this is where Adrian Peterson, you know, he sort of ramped up as this whole game went on. And he started to look like the Adrian Peterson of however many years ago. And he really did take over this game at times. And on that drive, he was a big part of that drive. First play, he went for 5 yards. Then he went for 8 yards. Then he had a 1 yard. I mean, he was just starting to ramp up and really take control of the game and help the Redskins move the ball, set up the play action pass. So Peterson had a heck of a day yesterday. And you show that the old guy still got something left in the tank.
And after the touchdown, it's 14-3. So at this point of the game, most of us are saying, yeah, this is done. The Dolphins, it's an insurmountable lead. The Dolphins have no shot coming back. And on the ensuing drive, they really had us thinking that was definitely going to be true as Josh Rosen was intercepted on a 3rd and 16 pass play. He was intercepted and pass intended for Isaiah Ford. It was intercepted. This was the interception that was thrown into double coverage, just trying to force the issue. Just a poor read from Josh Rosen, and it leads to another turnover. Mike, what were your impressions of Josh Rosen as we are starting to get ready to wind down to the changing quarterback, as all of us know? But what were your thoughts on Rosen in this game? He just looked lost.
It was a bad day. And when people, you know, and at least like the larger point, which, you know, some fans say, well, it's not fair this year to judge Rosen. No, it's fair. This is an NFL team, and that's an NFL, and those are NFL players. You know, some of them at least are out there. And you can't make a bad pass like that over the middle, because that's on him. You can't pin that on a wide receiver. You can't pin that on an offensive lineman. You know, Rosen is out there. You know, he's trying hard, and I know it's a bad situation overall. But it's plays like that, and it's games like this is why, you know, he's not the future for the Dolphins. That's why for the segment of the fan base that says, don't draft a quarterback this year, wait, because let's give Rosen a shot when we put a real team around him. You can put Josh Rosen on any NFL team, and you can give him a whole offseason to prepare. He has a ceiling, and it's never going to be, you know, that guy to sort of lead a team to a Super Bowl or lead a team consistently to the playoffs. I know it's only his second year and it's a bad spot, but the warning signs are there. And passes like that on that interception, that's a bad pass. And he can't make that mistake. And, you know, it is what it is this year for him, but he was bad on Sunday against Washington. And he eventually gets, you know, removed from the game here soon. But, yeah, I'm not liking what I'm seeing from Rosen here. The consistency week to week really isn't there. Is he better than Fitzpatrick overall? You know, if you want to have that debate, go for it. At the end, who really cares? But, yeah, tough day for Rosen.
So after the interception, the Dolphins did hold the Redskins to a field goal, an 8-play, 31-yard drive that was capped off by a 21-yard field goal as the defense came up big at the goal line. The Redskins had it first and goal at the 3, and the Dolphins held them out of the end zone. So a great job by the defense. Overall on Sunday, I liked what I saw from the front 7 on this defense for the
most part. Playing hard. They're playing hard.
They are playing really hard. Unfortunately, they still can't get a pressure on the quarterback to save their life. But I loved what I saw from Devon Godchild. Raekwon McMillan, as bad as he has been in past situations.
And he is bad in past situations.
The Dolphins played a ton on Sunday, and they had him on the field at the right times. He had a tremendous game. And kudos to him and the continued progression of Raekwon McMillan. It seems at the beginning of the year, everyone's talking about how great Jerome Baker is going to be, but it seems like Raekwon McMillan is starting to show those flashes of being that good, solid two-down linebacker that can make plays, especially in the run defense.
Raekwon is a one-trick pony, but he does that trick damn well. He does it damn well. He can do it with his eyes closed. He's a one-trick pony. He can stop the run. That's all he can do. You put him out there on a running back or a tight end in coverage, he's terrible. He's beyond terrible. But when it comes to that, you know, in the box, linebacker to stop the run, he's fantastic. He's a one-trick pony that does the trick great. And as long as you don't ask him to do more than that, you'll be fine. So, yeah, Raekwon, and he had a big day yesterday, actually. He had a solid game. So, overall, good for him. But, you know, the front 7 is playing well. And one name I want to sort of just mention, I guess now is as good a time as any. Charles Harris, another guy I've seen enough of. Him and Drake, they can't leave this team soon enough. Honestly, Charles Harris is absolutely miserable. This guy, he cannot get to the quarterback to save his life. And I don't know. I don't care if he's a 3-4 or 4-3. At some point, just make a goddamn play. And Charles Harris cannot make a play ever. Harris, goodbye. Hope you rent and you didn't buy when you were drafted to Miami, because I do not want to see him back with the Dolphins after this year. He is one guy that cannot go soon enough.
Well, they're essentially going to be they're replacing him with Taco Charlton.
Whatever.
So it's a wash. And well, in Miami, but you know, moving on from Charles Harris, you insert Taco Charlton. So Taco will most likely be here next year, replacing Charles Harris. Again, he's still getting acclimated to defense, but, you know, it is what it is.
At least he makes a play once in a while.
He out-snapped him, I think, almost 4-1 or 5-1 in that game on Sunday. He out-snapped him almost 5-1.
Taco might not be great, but every now and then, you know, it's a sack, it's a pressure. He'll at least put his hand on a quarterback after the pass is thrown. He's at least in the area of, you know, somewhat making a play. Charles Harris, you watch the game. He's not even near anybody. I mean, the guy's terrible. He's blocked so easily, too. I'm done with drafting guys out of Missouri. Between Michael Agnew and Charles Harris, I never want to draft anyone out of the University of Missouri ever again. I've been burned by them too much.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you know the rest.
Yeah.
And this is the drive right here that ended the game for Josh Rosen. It was a 3-play -1-yard drive. He was sacked for the 5th time on this drive. The play stood, even a holding on Jamarcus Webb. That play was declined, so the sack stood. The Dolphins punted away. And as Josh Rosen was trotting off the field, Brian Flores told him that they're inserting Ryan Fitzpatrick. And after a missed field goal by the Redskins, which really would have put the game away, the field goal that was missed was just at the beginning of the fourth quarter. It was 55 yards. It was missed wide right. And on the ensuing drive, Ryan Fitzpatrick was inserted into the game. The Dolphins, 9 plays. 55-yard drive, 3 minutes and 59 seconds, capped off by a Kalen Ballage 1-yard touchdown run from the 1-yard line, obviously. And it was a very efficient drive for Ryan Fitzpatrick. It actually started with a Kenyon Drake run for 9 yards, a patch to Albert Wilson for 8 yards, and that was really one of his only plays that didn't go for 1 yard. Kenyon Drake ran for another 5. Fitzpatrick to Mark Walton for 18. That was a beautiful screen pass that he almost went for a touchdown on that play, but someone got him by the shoelaces. It was a great play overall. Incomplete to Mike Gesicki. 9-yard run by Drake. 3-yard run by Drake. Josh Norman, defensive holding on first and goal. And then after 2 running plays, the Dolphins get into the end zone. Kalen Blige, 1-yard touchdown. A little bit of energy from the Miami Dolphins as soon as Ryan Fitzpatrick was in. It seemed like the offensive line remembered how to block. What were your thoughts, Mike?
Well, Fitzpatrick, you know, again, this year, with this type of season, Rosen should start every game. Josh Rosen should start. But on days he's having a rough day, you know, you could insert Fitzpatrick like a relief pitcher, so to speak. Maybe he gets a spark. Maybe he's, you know, gets some, he sort of finds some momentum with the offense, what he did here. And, you know, next week you still start Rosen. You know, with either one of these, neither one of these guys have a future in Miami, like a long-term future. So it's okay to go back and forth a little bit here. And that's what happened. Rosen started. He was miserable. Fitzpatrick comes in the fourth quarter here or so, and he leads 2 touchdown drives. And, you know, he put them in a position to possibly win the game. And that's what you want. That's what you want from your number 2 quarterback when your number 1's having a rough day. Fitzpatrick looked good. I think part of it with him is when he gets even a little bit of time, he doesn't hold on to the ball long. He knows where to go with the ball and how to get rid of it quickly. Rosen still holds on to it. I don't want to say too long, but it's every now and then. Not Ryan Tannehill long, but he holds on to it an extra second or two when he probably when the ball should be out of his hands. And Fitzpatrick knows what he wants to do on each play, and he gets rid of the ball quicker. And that's why he's not getting – that's why he might make the offensive line look a little bit better, although Ted offensive line was terrible yesterday. He might make him look a little bit better at times because the ball's coming out quicker. So that's the main difference. But, you know, Fitzpatrick had a pretty good day. You know, for the limited time he was in there, he had a pretty good day.
And after the touchdown, the Dolphins and the Redskins went back and forth on punts until the Miami Dolphins got the ball back with just over 2 minutes left in the game from their own 25-yard line. The drive began with an incomplete pass to Kenyon Drake. That brought us to the 2-minute warning. Then a beautiful catch from Mike Gesicki from Ryan Fitzpatrick for 30 yards that set them up at the Washington 45-yard line. Before we continue, Mike, a flash from Gesicki. This is why they drafted him. The type of catches he can make. And he made it in a big spot yesterday for the Dolphins.
Made it in a big spot. You just like to see more of it. Honestly, that's what it comes down to. Great play. Fantastic play. You just want to see more of it from him. And, you know, with him, we see, you know, something like that every maybe 3 or 4 weeks, if even that. But, you know, hopefully we'll see more here as we move forward. He's still a young guy, but we'll see. But nice play by him over the middle, which sort of saved that drive, I think, and sort of put them in a position to keep the drive going and eventually get the touchdown.
Absolutely. And the 45-yard line, incomplete to Preston Williams. It was kind of a throwaway from Ryan Fitzpatrick as it was a no-huddle play. Then it was a short pass to Kenyon Drake for 8 yards. And 3rd and 2, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick scrambling for 5 to get the first down from the Redskins' 32-yard line. A 11-yard pass to Allen Hurns, who is good to see him on the field playing after that brutal hit he took in Dallas. But he made a play for an 11 yards. Dolphins had to use their final timeout with 26 seconds left. On the ensuing play, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick to Preston Williams for 10 yards. And I was very shocked to see him not try to get out of bounds. He did get the first down, but it's not college. It didn't stop the clock. So Fitzpatrick had to spike the ball. And on the very next play, with 6 seconds remaining in the game, Devontae Parker from Ryan Fitzpatrick from 11 yards out to make it a 1-point game. And then we get into really the topic that we're going to talk about here for a few minutes. But before we do that, Mike, another play made by Devontae Parker in a clutch moment.
Look, he's having a pretty good year. And I know some people like to point out, well, in this game he had a drop, that game he had a drop. I know. But what we took him in round 1 some 5 years ago, the bar was set high. and he failed miserably. So right now is the bar set low. And for I know it's set low, but he is surpassing that, and he's on pace to have his best year as a member of the Dolphins. And I know you can say, well, the season doesn't matter, they stink, and that's all well and good. But for what they're paying him, he's outperforming what he's now being paid, because obviously his contract was redone this past offseason, and he's outperforming his contract. And, you know, he's making plays this year. He really is. He's looked like a whole new player. And I know it's, you know, in this miserable season, it's tough to shine a light on one person and say, you know, positive things about him. But if there is one person on this offense you can shine a light on and say positive things about, it's not any of the running backs. It's damn sure ain't anybody on the O-line. It's not any of the tight ends or quarterbacks. It's Parker. And Parker is probably their best offensive player right now. And a big touchdown here late in the game to put the team in a position to possibly win the game. So, you know, look, nobody's ripped Parker more than me, but you got to be fair at the end of the day. The guy's having a good year. He really is.
And that sets up the big conversation. The Dolphins were figuring out what they wanted to do, and they decided to go for two. And the Dolphins did not convert the two-point conversion to try to win the game. So it was either you kick the extra point and play for overtime, or you go for the win. You're 0-4. I love the play call in general. Not the actual play itself, but the call to go for two. Because in a season where your team is struggling to find wins, you put the team in position to win the game. The execution was not good on that play, but I really love the aggressiveness of Brian Flores, and it gave a jolt to those players to give them a chance to win the game in a year where the media, the fans, so on and so forth, just want to see losses. This could have been the big middle finger to everybody, but it ended up not working out for the Dolphins to get the victory. It ended up working out in the favor of the Tankers, where the Dolphins lost this game 17-16. Mike, what were your thoughts on the two-point conversion call?
I like that he went for two, because now any time for the rest of the year someone says they're trying to lose on purpose, he can point to that play and say, like hell we did, we tried to go for the win at home. And it sort of shuts that crowd up, whether it's national media, whoever, who's saying, you know, they're out there trying to lose on purpose. No, they had a chance where they could have played for overtime at home. They had all the momentum in the fourth quarter. With Fitzpatrick playing at quarterback, they had all the momentum. If this game heads to overtime, there's no doubt in my mind they probably win. And I love the call that they went for two. Now, on the other side of the ball, the actual play call they made was abysmal. I mean, that's a brutal call. And I know in the postgame presser, we were in the room there with Flores. That's a play they worked on. That's a play they liked. That's something that, you know, they thought they had a good matchup with. But even if Drake caught the ball, which he didn't, but even if he did, you know, there were three Redskins there ready to crush him. There was no chance he was going to score. So that play did not work. It wasn't going to work. And I'm not sure when you got the ball that close here and you're going for two, if I'm going to spread the field and run that play. I don't like it. Washington was ready for it. You can second guess it all day. But the big story is Drake dropped the pass. And I don't know what it is when it comes to that side of the field in that end zone when you and me are down there for games. Last year against the Bears, you know, in overtime. Well, I think it was right before overtime, or it might have been overtime.
No, it was overtime.
Okay, it was overtime. Drake fumbles at the goal line when he had a chance to win the game. You know, he fumbles at the goal line last year, drops a pass this year, and, you know, for all the, you know, flashy plays he might make every now and then, it's the routine, mundane, everyday plays he doesn't make. And there's more of those plays in the course of a game than the, you know, splashy plays that people remember. And, you know, he doesn't make those plays. And, yes, if he would have caught the ball and got hit, not his fault. Nobody would be ripping him. They'd say, why'd you call that play? He had no chance to score. But when you drop it, the whole thing just becomes moot. It don't matter. He dropped the ball. And he can't drop the ball. You just can't drop the ball. I mean, it wasn't even a hard pass. It was a little sideways pass that went maybe, I don't know, 10 feet. He was standing right on top of the quarterback, and he dropped the ball. So I like that they went for two, though, and I think that's going to, you know, pipe down a lot of the naysayers saying that they're trying not to win. No, he tried to win the game. And I think if they would have ran, if they maybe lined up in the I formation trying to run it in, they might have scored. If they would have tried another type of pass play, they might have scored. Just that particular play, I didn't like that play call. But I'm glad they went for two. Even though I'm rooting for them to lose, I'm glad they went for two because it does shut up a lot of people now.
It can shut up some people, but it you know, the bottom line is the Dolphins try to win the football game, and you can't fault them for it. You know, this is a team that's working hard. They fought hard to come back in this game. I felt they outplayed the Redskins for a majority of the game, especially defensively. I thought
In the second half,
Second half was a completely different story than it was in the first half, especially with protection. So let's break down the stats here. The Dolphins' first down totals, the Redskins 13, the Dolphins had 21 first downs. Third down efficiency, the Redskins 2 of 11, Dolphins 3 for 14. God, this was such a bad game. Fourth down efficiency, Redskins did not go for it, but the Dolphins were efficient. They were 2 for 2 on fourth downs in this game. They ran more plays, 69 to 58. The Redskins outgained the Dolphins 311 to 271. Redskins had 12 drives to 12 because the last drive the Redskins had, they took a knee on one play. Yards per play, the Redskins 5.4, Dolphins 3.9, passing 166 to 187. The big thing was the Redskins were Case Keenum was 13 to 25, averaged 6.6 yards per pass. He was not sacked. The Dolphins were 27 of 43 combined between the two quarterbacks, 3.9 yards per pass. Two interceptions, sacked five times. All the sacks were on Josh Rosen. Rushing yards, Adrian Peterson looked like he was 27 in this game. The Redskins totaled 145 on the ground on 33 attempts, a 4.4 average. Dolphins had 84 yards on the ground, only on 21 rushing attempts at 4.0 average. The Dolphins were 2 for 2 in the red zone in the fourth quarter, and that was their only two trips. So 100%. So, like we say since week one, baby steps.
Yeah.
Penalties, Redskins 6 for 56. The Dolphins 5 for 45. Disciplined football. Something to, take away. It's nice to see that. Dolphins did turn it over twice with those two interceptions from Josh Rosen. And time of possession, 27 minutes and 21 seconds for the Redskins, 32 minutes, 39 seconds for the Miami Dolphins. Again, finishing the game with a loss of 17 to 16.
But you look at this here. This is something we don't see often, if ever, the past probably 2 years from the Dolphins. Total plays are at 69, close to 70. That's where you want to be. They're never that high. And they had more plays than their opponents. And they won the time of, and they won the battle of time of possession. You know, on paper, they probably should have won this game. They probably should have won it. And Rosen, you know, pretty much he just handed it to the Redskins with those bad interceptions. But on paper, this is one of their it's not a great performance, but more total plays, more time of possession. It really was just the turnovers that sort of slowed them down between this game of two pretty bad football teams.
Yep. All right, you can ask me the question.
Has Josh Rosen done it? No, I'm not even going to ask it. Look, Josh Rosen, you know, it is what it is. And like I said earlier, I'm not going to go through it all again. He's not someone we need to see more of after this year. Now, if he's still on the roster after this year as a number two quarterback, or maybe he starts the first month of the 2020 season, well, whoever they draft, you know, takes a little bit extra time to get ready to play, fine, no problems there. But they're going to draft a quarterback in round one. They're going to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft in round one, and he's a starting quarterback. There's not going to – in Josh Rosen plays no factor into that whatsoever. None, period. I can ask you the question. I know your answer is going to be no. but it is no. And that game – look, Rosen has looked okay at times this year for a half and such. This game against Washington, and Washington stinks. Josh Rosen was terrible. I mean, he was absolutely terrible.
A lot of it is lack of reading, lack of progression, lack of, you know, it's him locking onto his first target and not moving his eyes, trying to manipulate the defense trying to, you know, to try to make a play. And, you know, everyone can point to the offensive line being dreadful, and he doesn't have time to throw, and he's throwing the interceptions. The interceptions, he had time to throw the football.
On those plays, he did. On those plays, he did. And with the offensive line, let me just say two things. The offensive line, as we know, stinks. And it's like beating a dead horse to say this over and over again. One thing I want to sort of do a callback on is Jesse Davis, who, you know, another guy yesterday who was just brutal. I mean, there was a sack. I think there was a sack in the first half where I don't even know if he touched the player. I don't know if he touched him. And here's the thing with now Jesse. He's moved back to right tackle. That's his, you know, his home. That's his position of strength. And when they gave Jesse Davis the extension, my question is not that they gave him an extension or not that they gave him a little bit more money because they got all the money in the world to spend. It's like, why'd they do it then? They didn't need to do it the first week of September. They could have waited until after the year and extended him. It's not like Jesse Davis is going to have, you know, 31 other teams knocking down his door. Okay, Jesse Davis is a marginal player. Jesse Davis, I know people find this hard to believe, but I believe it to my bones. It's 100% fact. On 31 other teams, Jesse Davis does not start. He only starts on Miami because Miami has nothing else, and the bar is set so low with their offensive line. He's a backup offensive lineman, and if Miami wanted to hold on to him after this year, that's fine, but they probably could have signed him to an extension after the year for a little bit less money, and that's just wise, okay? Why they needed to rush and extend him the first week in September, you know, makes no sense. And his play yesterday was brutal. And they can tell me he's a locker room leader. When he speaks, people listen. That's all well and great. I want a guy who can block somebody. I don't need a motivational speaker. I want a guy who can actually block somebody. And he was terrible yesterday. And the other guy, who he's a rookie and he's been playing well, Michael Dieter. You know, he had another bad day yesterday. Again, I won't go as hard on him. He is a rookie thrown into this mess. But, you know, he wasn't good yesterday either. And supposedly the two best offensive linemen we have, which I know it ain't saying much, you know, were terrible on Sunday. Terrible. And that's why, you know, when you say, you look at the rest of the schedule, will this team win a game? You know, Washington might have been your best shot. Maybe Cincinnati at the end of the year. But when your best players don't perform well and you still lose, that's not good, okay? And the schedule's only going to get a little bit more tricky here when you got teams like the Bills, who are very good. Teams like the Jets, who seems to might be now putting things together with their quarterback back. You got the Colts, you got the Browns, you got the Eagles. You know, those games, Miami, you know, has no shot in. So I think yesterday was probably their best shot to win a game, and they lost it. But when their guys who are supposed to perform well don't, it just makes it even that much harder. It really does.
And you can't forget the Steelers in the mix, too.
I forgot. But they even look good this week.
They look great against the Chargers on Sunday night. So it's, you know,
Pittsburgh can still play defense. So yes. They're going to shut down this Miami offense. So it really comes down to, can Pittsburgh put together a couple drives on offense where they put up even, you know, 10 points? Because Miami, they're not going to score on the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh on a Monday night. That team just shut down the Chargers with a future Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, they shut them down for three quarters and essentially had the game in hand. But, you know, this Miami offense ain't going to do nothing against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. And it really just comes down to, does the Pittsburgh Steelers offense do anything? And it's just, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. We are counting down. We have 11 more of these to go, folks.
Thank God. Can't come soon
before this dreadful season will come to a close and that week 16 game is looming. It's already looming, but I think the Bengals are going to have a win or two.
Oh, I think more than two. I think by the time Miami plays Cincy, I think, one, Cincinnati will have won at least three games, and two, Miami will have the number one overall pick locked up by then. That game doesn't really concern me. Cincinnati, they have been in, I don't want to say every game, but they've hung tight in most of the games this year, and, you know, they're going to get a little bit of luck here one of these weeks and win a couple. And you look at the AFC North, you know, you can pencil in the Ravens right now for the AFC North champs. Cleveland looks awful. Pittsburgh is what Pittsburgh is. So they're going to get some wins here eventually, and they're going to catch a break. They still have to play the Jets, too, I believe. They got to play Washington. They're going to get some wins here. And I'm not worried about Cincinnati so much. I think this game yesterday was huge for the Dolphins in their pursuit of the number one overall pick, because it pretty much takes Washington out of the picture. You got a team like the Broncos. They won again. You can take them out of the picture. You got Pittsburgh won, even though we have their pick, whatever. You know, I think this game is really going to catapult us to that top pick of the draft. You have a team like the Jets. They won. I really think it's ours right now at this point, because I just don't see us winning anything. And I think at the end of the day, it just means one thing. Tua is coming to Miami.
And that November 9th college football game, Alabama-LSU, is going to be probably for the quarterback of the future of the Miami Dolphins is probably on that field. So whether it's Tua or potentially the up-and-coming Joe Burrow, you know, again, if the Dolphins are picking one, it's Tua. Unless Tua tears ligaments all over his body.
Even if he did, they'd still take him. Even if he did, they'd still take him. They'd be like, what's a year? Rehab with us. We're good. Even if he tore up his knee, I still think they take him. He's that good. And I know people are going to go, oh, how can you do that? Why not? I still think they take him.
So November 9th is going to be a great day. And that's, you know, I saw a great tweet. The NCAA should move that game into Hard Rock Stadium to have that game played on the home field of the Miami Dolphins, so the Dolphins can get a real good look at those players. And Stephen Ross can sit back with his popcorn imagining what it's going to be like on Sundays in 2020 with either of those quarterbacks on the field. So really, outside of that, it's, you know, it was a tremendous weekend. We had a great opportunity to be involved covering this game. Met a lot of interesting people. You know, a doctor that has been working with the Sylvester Cancer Center for many years. The Dolphins raised $5.2+ million again for cancer research. So kudos to the Dolphins, the community, the DCC, Jason Jenkins, and everybody involved. It is such a great thing to see, and so many people lives are affected positively for loved ones that are affected by such a terrible disease, and they're getting cures. They're finding ways to get these people healthy. And that's the most important thing, and that's why that money is so important. So I believe it was February 20th.
February 20th. No, 2020. It might be the 29th. Hold on, let me check. And that was Dr. Nimmer, who I got to meet last year when I was on the field at halftime. Great guy, super smart, and does a lot of good work there helping find a cure for cancer. It was $5.2 million, which puts the grand total at $32.5 million. For the Dolphins Cancer Challenge. And the next one is scheduled February 29th. So it's a leap year. February 29th, 2020. That is when DCC 10 is happening. Dolphins Cancer Challenge 10, February 29th. As that gets closer, we'll have links up on our site where you can sign up for it if you are in the area and want to participate. Or if you can't and you just want to send some money and a donation, we'll have that up as well. Or you can sponsor a rider. We'll have all that stuff up on the site, because the money 100%, let me say that again, 100% goes to fighting cancer. There's no, you know, third party taking out their cut, or this one's taking out their cut and somebody else has got their hand in the cookie jar. No. Every dime raised is donated and nobody else sees the money. And we have video up on our website. Check it out at dolphinstalk.com with us talking to Dr. Nimmer from the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. And again, great guy. And you'll want to hear what he has to say. We also spoke to a lady talking about the concussion issue and how they're trying to fight that in South Florida, starting at the high school level, and how they're teaming up with the counties and how they're teaming up with the high schools to, you know, how to treat this issue on the high school level. So when these young players move up the ranks, they know the symptoms, what to look for, and so do the coaches, the faculty at that level. you know, they know how to take someone out of a game, and they know how to treat them immediately once there is a possible concussion on the field, and it's something they want to expand outside of South Florida, all throughout Florida, and then eventually all throughout the country. And we got video of that up on the site. Good stuff there. And we also have video. What was the other one? Oh, with Jason Jenkins with the Tailgate Unites community. They hosted three groups at their tailgate. We had the opportunity to speak to Jason as well and get his thoughts on the Miami Dolphins working in the community with these youth groups. So check out that video. All the videos are up on our YouTube page, which, again, main link up at the site at dolphinstalk.com. And we'll also have some articles on this stuff. One of them's up already on the site with more information about all this stuff. But, you know, even when the team loses on the field and they're going through a rough year, you know, there's the other side of the house when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, the work they do in the community, the work they do, you know, in South Florida, with youth groups, with high schools, fighting cancer, and that stuff. You know, they're having a perfect season because they're doing all the right things and they're helping all the right people. And if you want to participate in any of this stuff, by God, just reach out to Tom or myself and let us know, and we can put you in touch with the right people, of course, because that's where the Miami Dolphins do really great work off the field, in the community, you know, helping people, and top-notch, first class, all the way there.
It's truly beautiful to see all the work that they do for that community, and, you know, the Football Unites, tailgates, all that good stuff. You know, that it truly shows the care that they have for the community and how they, you know, they're trying to bring people together down there, because it is a very diverse culture in South Florida. So it's amazing to see everything that happens. And to wrap up the show,
in a foosball table they had, was by far the biggest foosball. This thing was like four of them all put together at one. You could have had probably, I don't know, 25 people on each side playing this game, and it would have been amazing. This thing was huge. I think I put a picture up on my Twitter account. Check it out. This is the foosball table of all foosball tables.
It's tremendous. It wouldn't even fit my garage, folks. It's that big. But to wrap up the show, here on Sundays leading up to this trip to South Florida, we were pleading and begging to get good Italian food down in South Florida. And Mike, I think we found one.
We hit a home run. We did a home run. We hit a grand slam. And first off, I want to thank everybody, the over 100 people who sent in suggestions and places for us to go. And I'm sure the place we ended up selecting isn't the only place with top-notch Italian food, but we had over 100 entries, and this is no joke. Tom and myself visited the website to each and every one of them. We did a little bit of research. We took that list of 100 down to about 5, and from that 5, we looked at the 5 places, and we selected one, and the place was, how do you say the, Il Milano? Il Milano, okay, that's it. And we went there Sunday after the game. And by God, that was some of the best Italian food I've had in a while. And I got a veal parmesan with a side of spaghetti. The side alone was a full meal, I think. And the veal parmesan took up my whole plate. I couldn't even finish it. If I lived down there and if I didn't have a flight the next day, I would have took the rest with me. But since I couldn't because we were flying out, I felt bad having the guy throw it out because it was just so big. The pasta was cooked to perfection. The sauce was perfect. The rolls were hot and soft. This place, Tom, you had linguine and white clam sauce. It looked amazing.
It was great. 2 dozen clams involved in that dish. Sauce was fantastic. The pasta is homemade too. So with it being a homemade pasta and it cooked to perfection, it gets no better than that. And, you know, Il Milano is such a great restaurant.
Our place. That is officially our place.
If you're traveling to South Florida for a football game or you're going down there to visit in Fort Lauderdale by the ocean, that's where Il Milano is located. Go to that restaurant and enjoy the food. It is fantastic.
Yep, because we're going back down in 3 weeks to cover the Jets game, be back in the press box, and I guarantee you, we will be back at that restaurant because that place was so good. and it was fantastic. So, and that was sent in by Joe Carroll, who I've already reached out to Joe. We will be sending him a Miami Dolphins hat since we picked his place off of his recommendation, and he wins. So I will be sending him a Miami Dolphins hat as a token of our appreciation. He sort of won that little fun contest. And maybe we'll do something like this again in the future, not with, like, Italian food. Maybe we'll pick, I don't know, a steakhouse or something. But for this year, at least, we wanted good Italian food so we had a place that we could count on every time we travel down there to cover a game. Well, we got one. So that was good. What else? We went to the Hurricanes game Friday night. And I will say this. Great atmosphere, great wins for the Hurricanes. I don't root for the Hurricanes or for Virginia, so it's nice heading to a game just to watch a game between two schools that you really have no rooting interest for. Number one, usually when we're at Hard Rock Stadium, we're in the press box, so we don't get the feel of the stadium watching from the stands. Watching that game from the stands, Hard Rock Stadium's a beautiful stadium. It really is a gorgeous stadium that that Mr. Ross put together fantastically. Love that. The Hurricanes look good. They finally got back on their winning ways there, had a strong game. But that was a lot of fun on Friday night.
Yeah, and after that, we traveled around a little bit in Miami, found our way to Hard Rock Casino for some gambling. They're just finishing up that gorgeous guitar hotel down there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike,
you're
busy.
We have to tell the story.
You found yourself busy.
Let me tell the story. So this is our little crazy story. So Saturday, we go to Hard Rock Casino. I don't know what time it was, noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We get lunch, get a little sandwich, something. They go, you know, we're guys. So Tom goes his way to bet on what he likes to bet, and I'll go my way on what I like to bet. And we'll meet up in a few hours when we've lost enough or won enough where we're going to call it a day. So Tom was having a little bit of luck, I guess. He was one doing his thing. I'm off doing my thing. I cannot win to save my life. It was a bad day. I'm just losing money. Finally, after an hour or so, I'm done. So I tell Tom, you keep playing. You're, you know, whatever. I'm going to be at the bar watching the games. So I go to the bar. I get myself a few beers, and I'm watching the end of the Georgia-South Carolina game. Really good game. And I'm really into the game watching it. Sitting there all by myself, not bothering nobody, not talking. I don't know anybody down there. Just sitting there watching the game. And this, let's say, older lady, not old, but, you know, older. I think she said she was in her 40s. Comes and sits down with me. All right. Wants to talk. All right. Doesn't shut up. All right. The talk starts to get a little bit inappropriate. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? You know, then a probably, I don't know, and I'm just really wanting to watch the end of the game. I'm watching Fromm spit it up in South Carolina. He's having his worst game of the year. South Carolina lost their starting quarterback. They put the backup in. He's holding down the fort. I really just want to watch the game, and I got this lady across from me who just really won't shut up, and the conversation then gets a little racy, and I'm like, who is this lady? You know, we can't say for certain, but safe bet, she probably was a working girl. And she disturbed my afternoon to the point where I had to text Tom, save me, wait a few minutes, please come quick, wait a few minutes. The last text, where are you, get here ASAP, because I couldn't get out of this conversation with her, and I just wanted to watch you into Georgia, South Carolina, which I really couldn't. So, I don't know. Next time, I got to find a better bar or something, or just go back inside of the restaurant and just sit by myself at a table, because sitting at the bar was a bad idea.
I'm in the maybe the majority that was totally a hooker.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I've gone to Vegas 4 times. Going to be 5 in April. It happens. Trust me.
I'm just trying to watch the game.
Least expected to be ends up being one. So, just you know. Just, yeah, go back into the restaurant and just be in there if you're going to watch football.
Really? That's probably what I should have done. But it was a nice bar, that circular bar that they're building, which is pretty much done, but they're sort of – the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, and I'm guessing they got to have all this stuff done by the Super Bowl since they're going to have so many people in town come February. They have reshaped that since the last time we were there a year ago, and it is beautiful. But it's still a large chunk of it is under – construction, but that bar in the middle, which we know well because that's where Tom lost our rental car keys last year. So we know the area well because we were walking around it with our eyes into the rug trying to find the keys. It's all new. And it's like the circular thing with a bunch of TVs and Georgia, South Carolina. I just lost a few hundred bucks and I'm into Georgia, South Carolina. I can't watch it in peace. I'm like, I can't watch the game in peace. I just want to watch the end of the game. And I couldn't watch the end of the game because, but you know, thank God I at least had a few beers and I could relax. But I think if I wanted to relax more, that lady would have been more than happy to help me.
Yep, I'm sure that was a strong possibility. So, you know, that'll wrap up tonight's show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, be sure to check out DolphinsTalk.com. Now that we're back in town, all the content will be up on the website. Thanks for listening to today's show. I know the postgame show is a day late, but we had travel, you know, very early start to this game, if to this day. And we were able to get this done. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the show, enjoyed a couple little stories. The Dolphins again lose to the Washington Redskins 17-16, bringing the record to 0-5. 11 more of these things to go before we could finally put our eyes to the prize, which is the 2020 offseason and what the Miami Dolphins are going to be doing in a what I'm going to say, Mike, is going to be the busiest offseason in Miami Dolphins history.
Yep. Come the Monday after week 17. That's when you're going to hear rumors and rumblings of everything. Guys who they're going to let go. Guys who they might be wanting to trade. Guys who they're going to be targeting in free agent. Come that Monday after week 17, that's when the rumors are going to come fast and furious. And it's going to be a fun January, February. Then March and April is going to get really fun because March, you got the start of free agency, which I think this year starts a week later. It actually starts around like March 15th or 16th, which is like 1 week later than normal. And then the draft in Las Vegas, which is going to be, you know, it's going to be all Miami all the time in Vegas. They're going to, every time you turn your head, you're going to have the Miami Dolphins on the clock in this upcoming draft. And hopefully they're picking number one. And that's that. And, you know, we will be back in South Florida come the first week of November for Adam Gase's return to Miami. Tom and myself will be traveling back down there. In a few weeks to cover that game, and that should be fun as well. With the Jets, now they got a win under their belt, and we know Adam Gase is a miserable little guy who's going to want to probably run it up on the Dolphins if he can, and he probably will be able to that day as long as he has his quarterback under center. So that should be an interesting contest in a few weeks, which you and me will be traveling back down there for.
Yes, it's going to, I believe it's going to be great. And I'm looking forward to getting back down there to cover that game. And then we can just put our eyes to the end of the season. Would be only 2 months away at that point. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the next 11 weeks to see what players are still going to be pushing themselves to be on this roster next season. And the hope is that the Dolphins hit a home run in next year's offseason. But we still got a long way to go.
And one last thing, just want to say special thanks to the Miami Dolphins for granting us access for sitting in the press box. Not the first time they've let us in. Certainly won't be the last either, but just always want to say thank you for them for granting us that opportunity to be in there as well. So just want to give a shout out. And I'm not going to name names. They know who they are. Just a big shout out to everyone involved with that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for listening to the show. We are out. Appreciate everybody. Fins up. Let's go.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.